2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we are going to talk about, are you ready to go back to the office to work? Are you staying home? Do you want to quit if you have to go back to the office? Joining me today is Anders Mellon. He is a wealth reporter. So welcome to the show, Anders.
Thank you very much for having me.
You wrote an article for Bloomberg News that talks about people who would rather quit than give up working from home. So if their office requires, once, you know, most people are vaccinated or they feel comfortable, the managers feel comfortable bringing everybody back to the office, and they're like, nope, we're going to go back to the old way, people are actually going to give up their jobs rather than leave their home offices?
Yes, this was a hypothesis that we started talking about a few weeks ago, just based on sort of personal experiences and what we were hearing from friends and family and so on. And we made some phone calls, spoke to some experts, and they looked at some survey data and found a few examples of people who have actually quit their jobs, found new jobs that let them work remotely full time. And we published a story a week ago, and the response has been quite extraordinary. It's bounced around all over the internet, all over the world. And lots of people, this is on the minds of lots of people, we realize, perhaps more than we thought it would. So while we might not have seen a mass exodus of people from their jobs yet, this is certainly something that lots and lots of people are thinking about and that companies are going to have to figure out how to deal with in the months going forward.
Do you know if this is across the board for both men and women, or is more of the female population going to quit as opposed to men?
So we cited a survey in the story that was commissioned by Bloomberg News, which polled 1,000 U.S. adults, showing that 39% would at least consider quitting if their employers weren't flexible about remote work. The split between men and women was precisely equal, with 39% for both men and women, which was a bit surprising because I had actually thought that you would see a higher degree of women considering this, given that women historically have tended to be the primary caregivers for children and shoulder more of the housework. However, deserves to be said that the survey is pretty small. It's only 1,000 people, so it's by no means representative for the entire U.S. workforce. And we know, of course, that this country has perennial issues with childcare being hard to access. It's expensive. And the fact that women often, historically, often have, as I said, shouldered more of the housework and taking care of kids and families. And one of the people that we spoke with for this story, a 33-year-old mother of two, she cited this precise thing. You know, I have a 1-year-old and a 4 or 5-year-old, and they're not vaccinated. I need to be able to take care of them. You know, daycare is difficult. And that was a big consideration for her. And she ended up leaving her job and found another one that was 100% remote.
I wonder if, of the people you interviewed, I'm assuming they already have a job, either they have one and they're deciding whether they need to leave or not. Or in the case of this woman that you just talked about, she already found a remote job that'll let her work from home. But the rest, the majority of the other women, they already quit their jobs because they had to during the pandemic. So I wonder if this study didn't take into account the amount of women who already are out of work.
It did not, but that's, of course, a very interesting aspect of the story that I think that we didn't manage to get into in this particular article, but I think is an interesting one to look at going forward. Like you say, lots of women have already dropped out of the workforce for reasons that showed themselves last year in terms of difficulty of, yeah, schools were closed and not many families had that much to choose from. Study didn't look at them specifically, but I think that is an interesting, it's definitely an interesting area that I would be interested in looking closer at.
Do you happen to know, I mean, just listening to your voice, you have a Swedish accent. Are you aware of how this is playing out in other countries? Is it the same that more women had to quit their jobs in Europe or across the world than in the U.S.?
It obviously varies quite drastically from country to country and hard to say just across the board what's going on. I know in my own home country, Sweden, the shutdown was not as expensive as it was in the United States, and the government stepped in and provided quite a bit of financial support to companies in order to keep employees on their jobs, or at least have them keep getting paychecks. And the safety net is also much bigger in Sweden in terms of parental leave and other types of subsidies and financial assistance that you can get from the government. In other countries, it's been, sure, situations have been different. With returns to offices, I spoke to someone who didn't end up being in the story, but someone who raised this very thing about childcare and saying that if U.S. bosses are really concerned with bringing employees back, you know, a really good way to do that would just to be helping parents figure out affordable and, you know, manageable ways to provide for childcare. That would alleviate concerns of lots of parents, both men and women, because that's a big consideration, especially with schools being closed. And absent that, a lot of people just don't have that much of a choice. And that's, of course, an issue. And that will then, the return to office will then disproportionately hit the people that have typically, historically stayed home with children. And that happens to be women.
Yeah. And that just goes back to even before the pandemic. That has been a conversation for decades about having on-site childcare in offices and buildings and how to make it more affordable, even if it isn't on-site. But that does bring me to my next question, which I actually want to get to after the break. When we come back, we will go into why so many companies want to go back to how it was before the pandemic. Why are so many employees having to make that choice between leaving their home office and or quitting if they don't want to go back to the office? So we'll be right back with Anders Mellen. He is a wealth reporter.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. If it affects your life in any way whatsoever, we're talking about it. And today we're talking about having to make that decision of whether you go back to the workplace if your boss says, no more working from home, or you quit. So joining me today is Anders Mellon. He is a wealth reporter. And in that first segment, we discussed just that, people having to choose if their bosses no longer wanted to be flexible about working from home. So I want to talk about those bosses and those companies. We've seen that it works pretty much across the board for the last year, remote working. So why would companies or managers be, hey, no, you need to be back in the office now that you're vaccinated and the pandemic is on its way out?
So throughout our reporting, we saw a few different reasons. Diminished collaboration is one that has been raised, an erosion of company culture, making it difficult to integrate new staff, making it difficult to train more junior staff if they don't have proximity to more senior employees. And also one thing that bosses keep pointing out is that, you know, these little moments when you bump into a colleague at the coffee machine or, you know, walking in the hallway, you strike up a conversation, you might, you know, come up with an idea or figure out maybe we should try to do this thing together. Those little moments go lost when workers are not physically present with each other, some bosses have pointed out. And, those are the reasons that people are getting called back. And you see that from bosses from tech companies in Silicon Valley to, you know, financial firms on Wall Street. It's kind of across the board with some exceptions. But those are the arguments that we've heard.
Which are all typically the ones that you mentioned, especially are typically run by white males, older generation.
It's a bit of a delicate part of this. One question that we did try to address in the story was, is there a generational aspect to this push and pull between being in the office versus remote work? And the survey that we cited in the story, it pointed to a certain generational split. It showed that millennials and Gen Z, the people that are 40 and below, were more prone to consider quitting their jobs if their employees weren't flexible about remote work than older employees. So there definitely, at least in that survey, shows that there's generally generational difference. Then I think anecdotally, we've seen in certain instances CEOs that are perhaps white and perhaps towards in the latter half of their careers who have been some of the more vocal proponents of an in-office culture and talked about the virtues and the benefits of having that. And it's a narrative that I've seen a lot on social media in the aftermath of the story, people saying that, you know, it's the baby boomers that want to bring us back to the office.
Right.
It's hard to say to which extent that is actually being playing out, but it is a theme in the discourse around this topic.
Yeah, and I think I've been a bit spoiled in the industry I'm in the newsroom. We have to have a certain amount of people at the news studio because you're not on the air unless people are here. But what our group did is they had one person per department at the station, and the rest of us all worked from home. But then if somebody went on vacation or became ill, then somebody from home came in and took their place. So pretty much all of us have been in and out of the station during this entire year. So it hasn't been completely remote or completely at the station. But I do know, and this is something that you mentioned in your article in Bloomberg.com, is that some managers believe that if they can't see their employees, that the employees are not working. And I actually ran into that several months ago. One of my supervisors, even though I'd been in and out of the station this whole time, and I don't think he meant it in a bad way, but because he hadn't seen a lot of the people for quite some time, I was going to be at the station for an hour by myself because of scheduling issues. And he goes, do you think Heather can handle it for an hour? Now, mind you, before the pandemic, I'd worked weekends for 12 hours straight all by myself. So it's like he forgot because he hadn't seen me and was worried I couldn't run the station for an hour by myself.
It's a concern that I think I heard in my throughout my reporting. One of the individuals named Portia Twitt, who we talked to for this story, she felt that very strongly with her bosses and expressed that she felt like there was a belief from their side that if they couldn't necessarily see her, that there was questions around productivity and how busy she were, even though her own opinion was more productive while working at home. And that is one of the sticky points that tend to come up in these situations, whether it concerns Portia that we talked to or other companies where this is bubbling up to the surface, that some workers feel that there's a pressure from bosses that they need to be, want to have people, want to be able to keep closer track on people by keeping them in the room. To which extent that's actually the case overall, it's hard to say, but it's also a theme that we're seeing in this conversation.
In your reporting or just looking at this, did you or your colleagues come up with some ideas, or did somebody else mention to you how we can make it a more flexible workplace, no matter what industry people are in?
Well, I think there was just a few days ago, Apple announced that workers will return to offices in September on a semi-in-office, semi-remote schedule. And certain points, there were feedback from employees. Not everybody were super happy about this. And some employees drew up a memo that was sent to company executives. And they outlined a few suggestions that included that instead of decisions about remote work being made at a central level, it should be just more autonomous for each team, and that companies survey workers to see what they actually want, and that you are offered a transparent and clear plan to accommodate for people being able to work remotely and perhaps having hybrid setup, and also to survey workers who might leave their job and ask how big of a factor was this when you decided to leave. So I think that captures pretty well the sense that what I picked up from workers that we spoke with was this idea that, you know, last year we were forced to work from home and there was no choice or no real rationale behind it. It's just what we had to do. And the economy is still turning, companies are still making money and companies are still doing work. So clearly the world did not fall apart over this. And so why do we then necessarily have to go back to offices? Because we've shown that this works. And if we want to go back to the offices, perhaps it should be our choice, or at least we should have a say in whether that should be the thing. I think that sense of the autonomy that you all of a sudden that you had, that you were given last year, now it's being taken from you again. I think that's what frustrates a lot of people.
Okay, we do need to take one more break. When we come back, we'll wrap everything up and go over anything else we may have missed. Again, joining me today is Anders Mellen. He is a wealth reporter. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're talking about giving up your job instead of going back to the office. That is a choice many people are making when their employers say no more remote working. So joining me today is Anders Mellen. He is a wealth reporter. And Anders, in the last segment, as we were wrapping up, we talked about employees. The reason they might quit is because they feel like they don't have control. Last year, they had no control when they were sent home and forced to stay there. And then now they may be forced to come back into the office since they've adjusted to work at home. I wanted to touch on something really fast. My company actually has sent out two different surveys to all the employees asking us, what do we want? Now, whether they take all of our suggestions into consideration or not, that's another issue. But they have asked us. And in those surveys were also, do you have what you need to work from home? Do you feel completely supported while you're at home versus when you're at work? And it sounds like they are looking at a way to do a hybrid of either entire departments completely working from home or possibly 2 days in the office, 3 days at home or something like that. So I think that my company, at least, they are trying to make their employees feel like we do have a little bit of control over our lives, because this last year, I think everybody felt like there was no control.
Yeah, and I would say one expert that we spoke to, who professor down at Texas A&M University, who pointed to that very idea that it's probably important for companies to realize that, or perhaps consider the possibility that not everything is going to go back to normal. And if you act as if everything is going back to normal, it might be a bit risky. And a way to do that, of course, is to make sure that you are attuned to your workforce and listen to what they actually want.
And one big thing about what we've been talking about this last 20, 25 minutes is the people who've had the people who've been able to work from home versus working in the office. These are white collar workers. These are not the nurses, the bus drivers, the people that we call on the front lines. Because you actually mentioned something interesting in that last segment. You said that for the people who may not want to go back to the office, they tell their employers, hey, you know, we've been doing all this from home for the last year and the economy did not shut down. It is still thriving. But I don't think that would be the same if the frontline workers all of a sudden stayed at home.
No, I think that's a very good point. If anything, the pandemic showed us that there are many people who work jobs for not a whole lot of pay and with not a whole lot of great circumstances and benefits that are totally essential to society. And many of those people do not have the option to stay at home or can't really do their work from home. And if all of them were to stay home, then nothing would really work for the rest of us. So it is a, this is a conversation that we are having that primarily involves people of jobs in offices and so on, which some people might call a class of workers with a certain privilege in that sense that you have more flexibility. However, that the issue is, of course, still very real for many of these people, especially those who might have tricky family situations or challenges when it comes to childcare and so on.
Yeah, because in the first segment, we talked about the people wanting to stay at home because they have no good options for childcare. With the children not being vaccinated, many of the daycare places are only allowing a limited amount of children now, if they're even open again yet. But if you're a frontline worker, what do you do with your kids?
Yeah, I mean, the issue is still there, right? And it's still, the childcare issue is sort of a perennial, you know, challenge for American parents. And the pandemic, if anything, only made it harder, which has raised it to higher awareness in the political discourse and people calling for various sorts of solutions. So in that sense, the pandemic really helped peel back the layers of just how challenging it can be, depending on your circumstances.
Okay. Is there anything else that we need to touch on of workers who may decide that they want to quit rather than going back to the office full time? They are not allowed to work from home anymore.
Yes, I would say one thing. I've seen a bit of pushback in social media over the story with people accusing those who chose to leave their jobs of, you know, quitting and wanting to live on welfare or just collect checks from the government. And in the limited sample size of people that we spoke to and experts that we talked to, that is generally not the case. Americans do like to work, and the folks that we talked to they had other jobs lined up or were going into some other kind of work arrangement. And it didn't really have anything to do with just dropping out of the workforce. It had more to do with wanting to keep working, wanting to keep pushing the career forward, just with a little bit more flexibility to shape things according to each person's desires and needs and for the people around them too. And I think that's an important point to make.
Well, thank you so much, Anders Mellen. This article you wrote for Bloomberg.com, is there any place else that people could find your work, especially if it's about wealth? Because I want to collect all the wealth I can.
Of course, don't we all? I am also on Twitter. My handle is Mellen Anders, and you can also find me on LinkedIn. Otherwise, Bloomberg.com is the best bet.
All right. Thank you so much, Anders.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's hkelly@ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.